I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Gary, how you doing this afternoon?
I am doing great, Richard. How you doing?
Real good, real good. And breaking news about Stefanski, that's not that much of a surprise. His name was out there, but Josh McDaniels left in the cold again, huh?
Well, when Josh McDaniels turned down the Colts after he accepted the job 2 years ago, it's really something that's going to hang over him until he's able to get a head coaching job again. I mean, how do you trust the guy if he accepts the job and then the next day says, sorry, I don't want it? It made him look bad. It made the Colts look bad. They had hired some assistant coaches at that point at his recommendation. It left them hanging. It was just a really bad look. And, I mean, it says an awful lot that the Giants went and hired Joe Judge, who basically worked under McDaniels as the wide receiver coach, and that 2 years ago they interviewed McDaniels and didn't feel they needed to do it again. So his star has really fallen.
Yeah, yeah. And the Patriots' offense this year wasn't great. I don't necessarily blame McDaniels for it. The receivers weren't as good. The line had some injuries and everything else. But, you know, he just wasn't the fair-haired boy now, and so many other guys are.
Yeah, and, I mean, if you're going to blame McDaniels for some of the offense, then, you know, you'd have to blame Joe Judge, because the Patriot receivers are the one position group, you know, in addition to the offensive line, which had a lot of injuries. But the receiver group is the one that really let down the Patriots, and specifically Tom Brady. I think that McDaniel's best shot now to be a head coach, to get a second shot at being a head coach, is to wait out Belichick in New England. But there's absolutely no indication that Belichick is ready to step aside and retire. He's probably about 4 or 5 seasons away from passing Don Shula as the all-time winningest coach in NFL history. And as long as his health remains good, then I don't see any time in the foreseeable future that Belichick is going to step aside. So I'm not really sure when McDaniel's next opportunity is going to come.
Yeah, that's for sure. And, you know, that leaving him at the altar, I mean, it worked out pretty well with Indianapolis, because I think Frank Reich is a very good coach. But, you know, nobody wants to be in that situation where they say yes and then change their mind 24 hours later. Well, you brought up Belichick, and, of course, Brady is the big story now. Is he going to stay? Is he going to go? Is he going to retire? Doesn't seem like he wants to retire from what he said. My way of thinking is Kraft certainly wants him back. I don't know that Belichick does. What do you think?
Well, tell me what the alternative is. In New England, if Brady is not back, I mean, you'd like to have a successor in place, and they don't have that. My best guess here, and this is strictly just, I call it maybe, you know, an educated opinion based on the fact that I know all the principals involved there fairly well. Clearly, Kraft wants him back. Tom Brady's like his fifth son.
Yeah.
And I think it would pain him terribly to see Tom in a different uniform. I can't imagine that Tom really wants to start over somewhere else. I know that playing in New England and playing for Belichick in a lot of ways takes the fun out of it because of the way he runs his program. But he'll be 43 in August, and you tell me where is a really good fit, someplace he's going to be comfortable on a team that's ready to win now. I just don't really see that spot. And then as far as Belichick is concerned, I mean, he doesn't want to go through a 4-12 season. And that's very possible if Brady is not back. I think the best thing for New England to do would be to identify their future starter, and I don't think it's the kid they drafted last year, and squeeze another year or so out of Brady. Or, you know, maybe bring in a free agent such as like a Teddy Bridgewater type that can potentially take over for him down the road. But I think it's in everybody's best interest there for Brady to be back in New England. Whether that's going to happen or not, I don't know. And you know he's going to want to get paid after playing for way below market value throughout the course of his career. It's the first time he's ever been a free agent. And, you know, Dak Prescott might set a new standard in the offseason, getting the annual average up to close, you know, $35 to $40 million. So I think ultimately this is what I think is going to happen, Richard. This is a long way of saying that I think Brady will sign a two-year contract. The second year will kind of be a phony thing to lessen the salary cap hit. And I think he'll make about $35 million from the Patriots in 2020.
Wow. So you're not a big Jarrett Sidham believer, which...
No, you know, Belichick put him in the game this year in garbage time against the Jets.
Right, and pulled him out right away after a pick.
And put Brady right back in.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, I mean, Belichick's history has always been cut a guy a year too early as opposed to a year too late. And some of these have been shocking, but none of them have involved your star quarterback, the greatest of all time, probably. So let's see if he stays true to the form or whether he just says, you know what? And look, if Brady had better receivers, I mean, if he had receivers like, you know, some other teams, they could be in the Super Bowl this year, I think.
Well, let's just say that Antonio Brown
worked out.
Yeah. Allegedly write that text to, you know, one of his alleged victims who is now going after him, you know, for sexual assault. If that didn't happen, if Antonio Brown bought into the whole Patriot Way thing and was able to play the whole season, if Josh Gordon didn't have issues that led to the Patriots letting him go. I mean, those are two really quality receivers. And in a short period of time, Brady grew to really like Brown and develop chemistry with him. I know Gordon was in and out of New England over the course of a year or so, but, you know, Tom really liked him also. And those are two receivers who are better than anybody New England has, except, you know, maybe Edelman, who's different as a slot receiver.
Yeah. Well, if Gronk hadn't retired too, you know, that's a fact.
Right, yeah, but Gronk wasn't there, you know, so we can't even count that. He had already made the decision to retire.
Right.
Brown and Gordon were there, and they both played themselves off the team with, you know, off the field behavior. And can you say, is that Belichick's fault? Did he not stock the roster properly? Well, if those two guys worked out, you're right. I think the Patriots would still be alive in the playoffs. But at the same time, both those guys came with incredible amount of risk. And to count on them to make it through the rest of the season based on their history, maybe that wasn't the smartest thing.
Yeah, might have been a little bit of hubris on his part, thinking, well, I can tame these guys. I can straighten them out.
Right. You know, it's the old Patriot Way thing.
Yeah.
We don't care what you did when you were another team. Once you enter the building, you buy into the Patriot Way. And most guys have done that.
Randy Moss.
Who've come in with histories of bad behavior. You know, Antonio Brown didn't last more than 2 weeks.
Yeah, sure didn't. Well, let's look at what one of his acolytes, Mike Vrabel, has done. I mean, certainly I wasn't shocked. I don't think you were, that he beat the Patriots. It was a bit of a surprise, but they did. But I'll tell you, last night I didn't see that coming at all. Did you?
No, I thought that the Ravens kind of had the look of a team that was going to be unstoppable in the playoffs. First time they were ever a number one seed, you know, to have the MVP in the league. Their defense was pretty good. But the Titans now have the look of the, now I'm not saying they're even going to get to the Super Bowl, but kind of have the look right now of the Giants in 07 and the Giants in 2011. You know, those teams, got red hot in the playoffs and built some confidence after so-so regular seasons. And, Derrick Henry is just unstoppable. He's got almost 400 yards rushing in two playoff games. They've played around Tannehill, who in the two games combined has about 160 yards. At some point, they're going to need him. I mean, at some point next week, whether it's Houston or Kansas City, you can't win with your quarterback you know, you can't win consistently in the playoffs with your quarterback not even throwing for 100 yards. So at that point, some point they're going to need him to step up like he did the second half of the regular season. But, you know, overall, yeah, I'm shocked that Baltimore lost. It's the first time a one seed has lost to a six seed since 2010 when the Jets beat the Pats and the Packers beat the Falcons.
Yeah, well, you know, in Tannehill's case, he basically played game manager. He did not make mistakes, didn't throw the ball all that much, made a couple of big throws when he had to. But, you know, I agree with you. It would be hard to think you could do that more than twice in the playoffs, and to think he can do it twice more is asking a whole heck of a lot. But as you say, during the regular season, he was real good, so you never know.
Well, they have not needed him. I mean, he made some nice throws last night, but they have not needed him to carry the offense. And listen, there hasn't been a playoff running back like Derrick Henry in quite a while who's carried the team. You know, I think back to Terrell Davis in Elway's last couple of years, was dynamic in the postseason and was a Super Bowl MVP. I mean, I'm sure there's been other running backs who have carried their teams through the playoffs since then, but that's the one that really sticks out in my mind. And Henry is just, I mean, the guy was a Heisman Trophy winner, and he's been a great player for a long time, but it's kind of been a revelation the last 2 weeks to see what he's done to a New England defense that through the first 8 weeks of the season, people were saying, well, is this the 85 Bears? Conveniently overlooking who they had played up until that point. You know, their first half schedule was really weak. And then for him to just run through, you know, the Ravens, especially in the second half when, you know, Tennessee was just trying to, you know, control the ball and keep Lamar Jackson off the field, and they just couldn't stop him. So, you know, if he keeps pounding away like that, maybe this formula can work. It's just, especially if they have to go to Kansas City next week and the Chiefs can score a bunch, you think they're going to need some more production from the quarterback.
Yeah, you certainly would think so. And you know, last night, too, going for it on fourth down, I thought that was the right decision by Harbaugh, but, you know, they'd gone 8 for 8 in the regular season, and then twice they get stopped. And that time, you know, when they had the ball in the 20-yard line and couldn't get the first down, and then you had the 66-yard run from Henry, that turned the whole game around because it could have been 14-14 at that point, and it turned out to be 26.
Yeah, I mean, when a team – confidence is such an incredible thing. When a team starts believing in themselves, and they were 9-7, and took to the final Sunday of the season to get into the playoffs, but when you win in New England against the defending Super Bowl champions, and then they played so tough in the first half last night, all of a sudden, you know, because they had to sneak into the playoffs, is forgotten, and all of a sudden they're thinking to themselves like, we can do this, and to stop Lamar Jackson twice on 4th-and-1. You know, that's good. And now Jackson had, I mean, it's amazing last night. Jackson, I think, had 508 yards of total offense between throwing the ball and running it. And the Ravens had, I think it was either 530 or 550 total. And so he was like the entire team last night. And Mark Ingram being hurt and in and out of the game obviously hurt them a lot. But, again, what we said before, seed to go in and beat the one seed that had won its last 12 games of the season, and they did it convincingly.
What do you think, Gary, and this is something that's come up, they didn't play the last regular season game. They rested their starters. It's been 3 weeks since they played again. Was that a big factor in the Ravens' rust?
You know, you'd have to say that it was because, see, I think that when a team has the bye coming up, like the Ravens did, to sit down with the team, or Jackson and a bunch of them, I don't know if it was half, but it was a deal of their stars and some of their older players. And then you have the bye. So it's December 22nd, the last time these guys played. I mean, that's a long time. It's different, as it turned out, And the classic case is what Tom Coughlin did in the 07 playoffs. The Giants had the number 5 seed locked up going to that final game of the year against the Patriots, the game everybody remembers. You know, he wanted to try to build some momentum going into the playoffs, and they also want to try to beat the Patriots, who were undefeated at the time. The difference in that case was that the Giants were playing again the next week, and he easily could have made a case that Coughlin should have rested some of his players to make that game their bye. If you have a bye already built in because you're the 1 or 2 seed, it's probably going to be proven to be true, and maybe what happened last night will change things, that you need to play those guys a little bit in the last game of the year. The risk of it be less, the risk of getting stale going into, and rusty going into its first playoff game, because it really looked, especially in the first half, that the Ravens just weren't into the game at all.
Trends in football. Is the era of the straight drop back quarterback over when you look at the, you know, Jackson, Mahomes, Watson, all these guys who can make something happen with their legs and take advantage of that?
Well, I think Mahomes is more of a drop back guy who can run. I don't think the first thing he looks to do is run. And Lamar Jackson was dynamic this year, and he's going to be the MVP. I don't know that 100%, but it certainly had a vote in that. But we won't know that until they announce the NFL honors. So anytime the guy is MVP and a team does well with a new twist to their offense, you say, okay, does this start a trend? But maybe it doesn't, because Lamar Jackson and that offense is 0-2 in the playoffs. So is it a great regular season offense that is not going to be productive to the extent of winning games? That he put up great numbers last night, but turned the ball over a bunch. And I just don't see the game changing where it's going to be 50-50 with a quarterback running the ball and throwing the ball. I still think the teams that are going to win Super Bowls 9 times out of 10 have somebody that you consider to be an elite quarterback in the traditional sense. Obviously, that does not mean Lamar Jackson is never going to win a Super Bowl. He might win it next year because he is pretty unstoppable. I'm just not sure that this is the way the NFL is going. It might be. I mean, maybe in 10 years, I'll look back and say, you know, Lamar Jackson did start a trend. But when you look at the quarterbacks coming out in the draft this year, I mean, Joe Burrow is really, you know, pretty nifty in the pocket, I guess is what I want to say. He moves around pretty well, but I wouldn't call him a running quarterback. Herbert's not a running quarterback. You know, Tua can run, but I think he's more of a drop back guy. Is there a trend there towards Lamar Jackson for next year's draft class? I don't necessarily think so.
Well, you know, what's funny, I get a kick out of people. Oh, you know, it's passing league, you know, running backs, And you look at what San Francisco did. Now, they did it with 3 guys, not just 1 like Derrick Henry. But, you know, the 2 teams yesterday that got the wins and were dominant were teams that ran the ball.
Well, I think I saw a stat, or maybe Dave Gettleman even referenced this the other day, that the top 4
passing teams in terms of
yardage didn't make the playoffs, and the top 4 running teams in terms of the yardage did make the playoffs. I do believe that in the playoffs you have to be able to run the ball and stop the run to win. But that doesn't discount having to rely on your quarterback for throwing for more than 100 yards. I would have to look this up somehow. I don't know that any team has ever won back-to-back playoff games with their quarterback throwing for less than 100 yards in each game. I mean, I would have to do some research on that one, but I'd be surprised if there's more than one or two examples in the era since the merger of something like that happening.
Yeah. And does defense still rule? I mean, we saw the Super Bowl last year without a lot of scoring, and In San Francisco, yesterday, up until garbage time in the fourth quarter, had allowed the Vikings six first downs in the entire game. I mean, you talk about defense.
Yeah, and the Vikings' performance yesterday obviously didn't prevent Kevin Stefanski from getting a head coaching job today. And Robert Saleh, who's the defensive coordinator of the 49ers, who stopped that Vikings offense, was a finalist for that Browns job as well, and he lost out to Stefanski. But, you know, you're right about with the Super Bowl last year, which was really kind of a boring game. But 2 years ago, you had that shootout between New England and Philadelphia. So, and then I think it was the year before, 2 years before that, the Atlanta New England game. Where it went into overtime and it was really high scoring. So trends probably last about a year. Things change so much. The one trend I do want to talk about, Richard, is the trend of Andy Reid being a different coach in January than he is in September through December, when he's one of the best coaches, regular season coaches we've seen. And right now I'd say the only reason I think that the Chiefs can get upset along the way here, either against Houston at home today or Tennessee at home next week, is because of Andy Reid. I think he's a horrible playoff coach. He lost at home to Tennessee a couple of years ago. He lost at home to New England last year. He can, as far as I'm concerned, the Chiefs very easily can lose today or next week.
What does he do differently?
Even though they're better than the teams that they're playing.
Yeah, what does he do differently? What do you see that marks the difference between regular season and playoffs with him?
You know, it's hard to say. I don't see a great sense of urgency from him. You know, think back to that Philadelphia New England playoff Super Bowl game all those years ago, where they were down two scores and their offense was going at a very slow pace. I remember a playoff game in New England a couple of years ago when he's with Kansas City that they were down two scores and wound up scoring a touchdown but didn't leave enough time on the clock to get the ball back. I don't know what happens to him if there's a change in his mindset, but clearly there's a history now of him. I mean, choking is a really strong word, but I think that the facts back that up. Look at the huge lead they blew. Kansas City blew in Indianapolis a few years ago.
Letting New England come again, back last year. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they had a couple of unfortunate things go against them. You know, interception that got called back by, I think that was the Dee Ford lining up in the neutral zone play. That had nothing to do with the play, but it cost them an interception that probably cost them the game. Until Andy Reid wins a Super Bowl, I'm convinced he never will. And I know that, and I like Andy a lot, but it's just there's too much proof now. His resume is so full of playoff disasters. They lost four out of five. I think it was four out of five NFC Championship games in Philadelphia. A bunch of them at home. There are some guys who just, you know, there's some players that really step up in the playoffs and make a name for themselves. And I guess there's players and coaches who don't step up and take a step backwards in the playoffs that make a name for themselves in a way that I wish they didn't.
And sometimes, Gary, you know, it's the flip of a coin. I will go to my grave thinking that last year against New England, had they won the coin toss, that Mahomes would have driven him down the field, scored a touchdown, and gone to the Super Bowl. And yet, see, and that's something you may disagree, but I just think that especially in the playoffs, to have one team not even have a chance to touch the ball just isn't right. You know, I'd like to see both teams get a shot, and you know, if they both score touchdowns, you know, take it from there. But it just doesn't seem fair. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, special teams and defense and offense, each one-third of the game.
Right.
So the team that's kicking off gets to play special teams and they get to play defense. And if you can't stop the team, then you don't deserve to win. I mean, it's the way the rules are set up, and I'm not even sure I agreed with if you kick a field goal, the game's not over on the first possession. You know, play defense. Stop them.
Yeah.
You know, don't cry about not having the ball.
Okay. Well, we'll agree to disagree on this one.
Get better at the coin toss, for God's sakes.
Okay. One other playoff thing that we may or may not agree on. What about a team like Seattle who has to go to Philly to play a team that barely gets into the playoff, has to play the road game? Would you say that the team with the better record, even if it's a wild card, deserves the home game over the division winner?
No, I don't think they should receive. Maybe I'm too much of a traditionalist here. It doesn't happen all that often. And I think there has to be a premium placed on winning the division. And, I mean, baseball does the same thing, right? I mean, for a wild card team never has the home field advantage after they win the wild card game. They always have to play at a division champion that they may or may not have a better record than.
Yeah.
And listen, the better team won last week. Seattle went in and won in Philadelphia. So having to go on the road didn't make a difference.
Yeah, and that's the other thing that has been the anomaly recently. Home field advantage doesn't seem to be there anymore. You know, at point of the World Series, the road team won every game, and this year you're seeing teams go on the road against supposedly better teams and beating them.
It's a kind of a hard thing to explain. I mean, you look at, you know, I referenced the Giants Super Bowl teams, the last two Super Bowl teams, the one in 07 was a run that may never be equaled again in terms of degree of difficulty. I mean, they beat the Bucks. Okay, there was kind of an even matchup in the wild card. But then they went into Dallas, and the Cowboys were the number one seed. They beat them after losing to them twice in the regular season. They go into Green Bay in what I've referred to as subhuman temperatures, that was the coldest I've ever experienced, and hope it's the coldest I ever do experience. And Eli looked like the guy who played in cold weather his whole career, and Brett Favre, who supposedly embraced cold weather, looked like an old man who was, his career was over, and they went under those circumstances. And then they beat an undefeated team in the Super Bowl. So they won, you know, three road playoff games to get to the Super Bowl. And then 4 years later, they had that home game against Atlanta. But then they go back to Green Bay, and this time they beat Rodgers after beating Favre. And then they go to San Francisco, and they beat a really good 49ers team in overtime, like they had beaten the Packers in overtime 4 years earlier. So it can be done. Like I mentioned before, you know, you start to build some confidence, or, you know, in the wild card round, and you have players like a Derrick Henry who can take over a game. It wipes the crowd out of the game. And certainly a home field advantage is really important, but it's not something that you can't overcome.
And there is another factor, too, that I've seen written about, that with instant replay, I mean, even though the referees are supposed to, you know, call them as they see them and be objective and everything else, they did some research and they found in the last 2 minutes of games, home teams generally got marginal calls. Now that there's replay, they're not getting them as much. Put any credence in that?
I have not heard that, but all I'd have to do is tell you that the biggest call in NFL playoff history, most likely, most controversial call, was in the Saints-Rams game last year, and it won against the Saints. So, and that was before replay.
Before replay, right. So there you go.
So before replay of pass interference.
Pass interference.
So I would tend to disagree with your previous statement.
Okay. Well, Garrett, we're out of time, but thank you so much. Enjoy the football today. Should be a couple of terrific games, and we shall talk again soon. Thank you.
Okay. If I can just tell the listeners, I'll be in with Jody Mack on Saturday from 2 to 6.
Okay. Next Saturday, 2 to 6. Okay. Previewing the NFC-AFC playoffs. Great. Okay. Look forward to it. Thank you, Garrett.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.